Hello everyone, and welcome back to another fun-filled episode of 1HMPS Retro. This is episode 13. I'm your host for the most, Andy, aka the Real Local Maniac, and with me today is the one, the only...
Hi, I'm Malk1976, and I'm back again for another episode.
How you doing, buddy? You alright?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, you?
Well, it's episode 13. 13 unlucky for some. And the reason why I'm saying that is because this is the second time we've tried to record episode 13, because the first time, basically, my computer just ran out of memory, so, I had to restart all over again.
Yeah, it's slow, really.
It is, mate, it is. And I'm running sort of short on time because my wife is, you know, is going to get home for about 2:30, and we've got to go shopping in Tesco's, and I promised her, you know, to have all my podcasting all ready, but hey-o. So what have you been up to, Malk? Anything exciting?
Well, lately, just doing more videos for YouTube and trying to beat the high scores on our forum's high score table.
Okay. Any luck with that then, buddy?
No, not really. I've even tried beating my own high score. I did beat the Bubble Bobble one, only to have Tony beat it again.
Right. And was then that I before just... you posted it up, or...?
Yeah, before I posted it, I went to post it and I noticed, oh, he's already beat it by a hell of a lot, and I just thought, oh... can't be asked to do that again.
See, the thing is with the high scoreboards, and guys, if you haven't checked it out, you know, just feel free to sort of like try and beat one of our high scores. It's just trying to find the time to do it. If I'm not editing the podcast, I'm doing a few little things behind the scenes on the site. And if I'm not doing that, I'm spending time with the family and stuff. So it's just trying to find the right time. But if I do get a chance, I'll try and do it. Let me quickly tell you a little bit what I've been up to, Malk. Last week was the Oliver Twins podcast, and I'll tell you what, mate, I was so happy and excited that I managed to get those guys on the podcast.
Oh, definitely, yeah, it was a fantastic podcast. I think it's the best one so far. They seem really down to earth, and it sounded really great.
I think that was one of the things that made the podcast even better for me, because I was such a huge fan of theirs. I grew up playing the games like Grand Prix Simulator and Dizzy and Treasure Island Dizzy. And for me to actually get to talk to them in person was just out of this world, you know?
Oh, yeah, it was amazing. To be totally honest, I've never really played the Dizzy games as such years ago, because I had a Commodore 64, and the only one I played was, I think, Treasure Island Dizzy on the Amstrad. But I couldn't say how good the colours or anything are, because my friend's Amstrad had a green screen, so all the games were green, pretty much.
Why would anyone have a green screen? I know it's cheaper, but hey. But yeah... going back to the Oliver Twins, I learnt so much from doing that podcast. I learnt little things like why Dizzy wiggles his arms, and that was to do with the attribute clash on the Spectrum. And if Dizzy went behind something, you wouldn't see him, so they kept on moving. And that added so much, you know, to the character itself.
Oh yeah, definitely. I've learnt a hell of a lot, and since then I've been playing the Dizzy games on the Spectrum emulator, and... I regret missing them, to be totally honest with you. To say, the reason I never played them years ago, because I had the Commodore 64, and I was always under the impression the Commodore versions were the worst ones, to be fair.
Right, well, I mean, they're pretty much exactly the same game, really, just a few different sort of like differences on the colour, and maybe music and loading screens and stuff. But, yeah, I'll tell you what, though, Malk, I was so nervous interviewing the Oliver Twins, you know. I was shaking the whole time beforehand.
You did an amazing job. You sounded like really professional, and it's got to be the best podcast so far.
That's called editing. I edited out all my sort of like tremblings and shaking and things like that. But speaking about, before actually we move on to this next bit that I was going to mention, I want to give a big shout out actually to the Oliver Twins. I want to say thank you so much for appearing on the podcast. You know, it means a lot to us, you know, and the community that you've taken time out to actually appear on the podcast. So thank you so much, guys. Big time.
Oh, definitely. Very good of them to take the time to do it. I mean, I'm sure they're busy people.
That's it. You know, they've got a big company to run. Now, speaking about podcast guests, you've been recording with a guest as well recently, haven't you?
Yeah, about a week ago, I recorded one with Steve Benway from YouTube.
Hey! Well, don't give too much away, but give us a little sneak sort of trailer type thing. You know, like, how was it? You know, were you nervous and stuff?
I was really nervous because I've never spoke to him in real life. I know it sounds stupid, but when you watch people's videos on YouTube and... get used to, you know, hearing them, hearing their voice, and then you've actually got them talking to you, it's really bizarre, and I don't know, I suppose in a way you sort of think of them as celebrities. I know they're not, but...
Yeah.
But you know, he was a great guy. We talked about his collection, talked about a few things. It was good fun.
I'll tell you what, so I'm looking forward to actually hearing the podcast properly. I haven't edited it yet. I will edit at some point. Now, that episode will be episode number 17, if I'm correct?
Yeah, 17. That's something that we've got to actually edit on the start of it, because I just forgot to mention what the bloody number was because I was that nervous.
Not to worry, man, not to worry. Yeah, let me quickly just tell everyone a little bit about how the podcast is going to run, because I've got a little plan. Every so often, we'll mix and match it, just like the way we do with the, you know, the hosts. It'll be either me, Mal, me, Swainy, or, you know, like Tony and Glenn and so on. But every fourth episode, we're going to have a community podcast where you guys from the site and the forums will get you on board, and one of us will sort of have a little chit-chat with you, and then that way you get to sort of hear your voice on the airwaves. And then every fifth podcast, we're going to have like a big guest, but more on that next time. All right then, mates. So anything else you've been up to then, buddy?
Doing videos for YouTube. As I say, not a great deal. I've been playing a few modern games, but we can't really talk about them, can we? Because it's...
Well, which ones have you picked up then? You know, we won't delve into great detail. Which ones have you picked up?
Castlevania, Lord of Shadows.
I like that. Are you liking it?
Yeah, it's good now. You taught me how to do the first, what I thought was a boss, but isn't. It was easy to do it. Beat him, yeah. Just hold the thing up and he goes straight onto it.
That's it. Just like the old classic sort of like Sinbad and the Eye of the Tiger, when, you know, the tiger jumps towards him and Sinbad lifts the pole up and he impales him on it. Just like that, mate. But yeah, keep on that game because you'll really enjoy that. But you know what? I've got plans to talk about Castlevania, Lords of Shadows at some point, and the new Duke Nukem, because I want to do a podcast called Retro But Not, where we talk about, you know, games taken, inspired from retro games to the modern times. So I think that will be an interesting show. That should be coming up in the next few weeks.
That's a great idea, actually. And that's another game I have been playing a lot lately.
And have you been finding it? I know a lot of people haven't been enjoying it. People go, oh, it's Duke Nukem, but...
I think it's fantastic. I can't fault it. On one of our forum posts, it was about joypads versus mouse and keyboard, you know, for first person shooters.
Yeah.
And I've played Tony, and bear in mind this is the first time I've ever played it online. Yeah, he was using the mouse and keyboard and I was using 360 joypad.
Yeah.
And he only beat me, I think, 13-11. So the joypad's not that much worse, really.
But you know what though? Truth be told, it's the way I see it is whatever suits the person, basically. If a person feels more comfortable using the sort of mouse and keyboard, hey, that suits you. If someone's more comfortable using a control pad, hey, that suits them, you know?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
It's not a big deal, really. All right, then. So, I'll tell you what, let's move on to our next section, which is the game review section. So, which games will you be talking to us about today, then, Malk?
Well, the first game I'd like to talk about is it's an old arcade game by Sega, Dynamite Ducks.
Tell us about Dynamite Ducks.
Well, this is a scrolling beat 'em up. It came out in the arcade in 1988 and uses the same hardware, System 16, what Golden Axe and Altered Beast use.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's a game where your two ducks and their friend Lucy, I don't know whether she's a girlfriend, that's a bit strange, gets kidnapped by an evil sorcerer. And I can't even pronounce his name, so...
Go on, give it a go.
Akraachu. Or something.
Well, you know what? I'm not even going to try and pronounce it either. So, yeah, we'll go with what you said.
And it's a really good game. I used to play it a lot on the arcade years ago. I've only ever played a couple of the conversions because it's on every single computer.
Mm-hmm.
I've played it on the Atari ST and I've been playing it a lot on the Amiga recently because that's another 16-bit wars I'll be doing soon.
We must be sort of like, after all these weeks of doing these podcasts, we must be on the same sort of mind sort of set, because I was recently thinking I might do an 8-bit Wars of Dynamite Ducks as well.
That's a good idea, because as I say, I've never seen any of the 8-bit versions. I tell a lie, I've seen the Master System one, that's 8-bit.
What did you think of the Master System version? Because that was the version that I played the most.
I thought it were good. I used to have it years ago, and because my brother had the ST, and I couldn't play on that whenever I wanted because he's a bit of a twat. Oh, you can edit that out. Well, I'm not bothered if you put it in. He is, but so I had a Master System at the time, so I got it for the Master System, and it's only one player. The storyline's changed. His human gets changed into the duck.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, it's been a while since I played the Master System version.
I think it's missing some of the weapons, and I'm not sure whether the levels are the same. Oh, that's what I forgot to mention. The guy out of KFC is standing outside the KFC on the first level. Colonel Sanders, is it?
Okay, yeah.
I
thought you meant the guy from your local KFC, you know, the guy that works there.
No, the guy with the beard. He always reminds me of fucking Rolf Harris for some reason.
It must be the beard, mate. It must be the beard. But, I mean, what was it about this game that appealed to you, Malk, which made it different than Golden Axe, different than Altered Beast, you know?
I just thought at the time it was... because it's more cartoony, I suppose.
Mm.
And the bosses, some of the bosses are quite bizarre. There's one that's a load of rocks, and you have to... Oh, I forgot to mention, you can power up your punches by holding the button, and he spins his arm round, and then a big fist comes out and hits him. And
it's a great little game, mate.
It's got loads of weapons on it as well. I did actually myself, personally, think it were better than Golden Axe.
Mm.
But I don't think many people would agree with that. But
no, saying that, though, I think Dynamite Ducks is probably one of Sega's forgotten games, basically, because I used to love it as well, Malk. The reason why I was drawn to it in the arcades was because it was bright, it was colourful, it didn't take itself too seriously. It had that sort of, like, wacky Japanese-style sense of humour, you know, little ducks, you know, super punchies. I remember them fighting against this fire character, and you had to shoot water at him, I think, and put him out, if that's right.
Yeah, I think that's either the first boss, because you have a couple of bosses per stage. I've never actually completed that game, to be totally honest with you.
Well, I think it's something we're going to have to try and do maybe on Main Hub and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
There's something you might not be aware of, which was brought to my attention on a video that Tony did. Tony did a video of the Sonic Fighters game.
Yeah, that's I was going to mention that. That's where I got the idea for Dynamite Ducks, because he's called Bean or something in that for some reason.
I think that's one of the characters, isn't it? Or...
Yeah, he's green-coloured instead of, like, Bin and Pin are red and blue.
Right.
And that one who's called Bean is, like, obviously looks like the Dynamite Ducks, but he's actually green. I don't know whether Sega decided they'd change the whole idea or whether he's even supposed to be the same character. I don't.
Well, maybe it's a character taken from that sort of, like, world. It's a shame, you know, I think Dynamite Ducks is... that they're all good characters. I'd love to see that come out on XBLA, you know. Be fun to play. I'd get it.
Oh, yeah, definitely I would. Yeah, I don't know why they don't remake it or do another one, because I think it's definitely underrated.
Mm. All right, you know what I'll try and do then? Over the next couple of weeks, I'll try and do an 8-Bit Wars of it, because it is pretty decent, you know, all versions. I think they've managed to capture the spirit of the arcade, you know, the wacky sort of sense of humour, the cartoony type sprites.
Oh, yeah, I'd be definitely interested in seeing that, because, as I say, I've never seen any of the home computer versions of it. I know it's converted by... It's by Activision, but it's actually done by Core, who are more famous for doing Tomb Raider, believe it or not. I can't stand Tomb Raider myself, but that's what they're most famous for.
All right, speaking about Tomb Raider, actually, I'm going to mention something about Tomb Raider when I start talking about one of my games. But we'll move on to your next game, if that's all right, then, Mark. What is your next game?
Yeah, my next game is Pac-Land.
About this game, mate.
Well, first time I ever played it, it was in an arcade when I was a little kid. I'm not sure what year it came out, actually. I think it was 1980.
Right.
I could be totally wrong. It's a game that's based on a cartoon that's based on Pac-Man. The cartoon was by Hanna-Barbera, and it came out in the early 80s. And then Namco done that game. It's a side-scrolling platform game, sort of like Mario type thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it is actually Pac-Man, and you have to go to the screen scrolls from left to right, and you can get power pills like you can on the actual Pac-Man game, and eat the ghosts, And the thing with that, it's got a different control system. You actually tap the joystick twice to run.
Yeah, that's right.
In either direction. And later on, you get these bits of the levels where it's all a river, and you jump on the ramp and then keep tapping the joystick and basically float across to get to the other side.
So have you finished this game then, Mal? Because I found it very, very tough.
No, I've never finished it. I can only do a few worlds on it. It's got loads of hidden secrets as well.
Oh, like what? I don't know about these.
On the first level, I'm not sure which one it is, but on one of the fire hydrants, if you run into it, he pushes it, and then he'll get a metal hat, like a tin hat. And so the ghosts that drop ghosts at the aeroplanes just hit that hat, and you get points for it. They don't kill you.
You know what? I never knew that. That's absolutely fantastic. How did you find it out? Or was this that one of the things that everyone knew back in the day?
I seen some kid do it on the arcade when I was little. That's how I found it out. Don't work on none of the 8-bit versions, only the Amiga and ST and the NES conversion that's diabolical on that. I wouldn't even bother with that one myself.
No, but I quite like that game, Mark, you know. The next question I was going to ask you, because I've been playing it on MAME recently as well, but there's two versions. There's one that says Namco and one says Atari. You know what that is?
Yeah, it's the same with Rolling Thunder, because Namco didn't have a distribution thing in... the rights to distribute games in America and other places across the world, only in Japan. So Atari actually made the machines for them, distributed them, but Namco actually made the game. I think it's done by Midway as well.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right, because I'm sure I've seen that up there as well. That always confused me, and you know, I'm kind of glad now I actually know the answer to that, mate. So thank you for clearing that up for me, because that's puzzled me for like years and years and years and years.
Yeah, that was in 1984 when it first came out. I found out now.
But you know what, saying that, all in all, I love the cartoon style graphics of this game. It's a great little platformer. I love the music. I think it appealed to me loads, you know, because I was a big fan of Pac-Man. I liked the cartoon. It looked like the cartoon. So all in all, it's a pretty much great game. I really enjoy it. Have you played the 8-bit versions?
Yes, I used to have it on the Commodore 64. My friend had it on the Spectrum. I've never actually played the Amstrad one, but I watched your 8-bit wars on it, and if I remember rightly, the Commodore won. And that was the first version that was released as well, on the actual conversions, because I remember having it myself years ago.
All right then, mate. So I'll tell you what, let's move on to the game that I'll be talking about. Now, earlier on, you mentioned Tomb Raider.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I'm not going to talk about Tomb Raider. The game I'm going to be talking about is Soul Reaver. Now, the reason why I mentioned Tomb Raider slightly earlier was because everyone kept on going about how amazing Tomb Raider was, the graphics, the animation. I didn't like it. I wasn't a big fan. The only thing I liked about it was when Lara Croft died, she sounded like she was having an orgasm, basically. So I used to do that all the time and not actually play the game properly. But Soul Reaver, I can't remember who it's made by, but I first played it on the PS1. Eventually, it did come out on the Dreamcast, but it's a game that if you haven't played, you have to play, basically. You basically play this guy called Azrael, and basically, I think the bad guy's called Kane, and he was in a previous game, and Kane gets upset with Azrael because basically he evolves better than he did, so basically he kills him and throws him into this, like, evil mists and stuff like that, where Azrael dies, and then basically he gets brought back to life by this deep booming voice. You don't know who he is, you know, why he's brought you back to life, and then basically he says he wants you to kill Kane, and basically that is your mission, to try and do this guy's biddings and kill Kane. Now, it does play similar to Tomb Raider, but it does have elements that are so much better. Now, the first element that is better is you can pick up objects and impale people with them, which is absolutely superb, Malk. Honestly, it's really amazing the way you can stab people, chuck weapons like spears. So it's really well done. Have you not played this game at all?
I think I may have played it only briefly on my friend's Dreamcast. I definitely didn't have it myself. As for Tomb Raider, I can't stand Tomb Raider at all. Never liked any of them, to be totally honest with you.
That's the thing, that game looks ugly, but Soul Reaver, on the other hand, was smartly programmed because everything looks really smooth. And the thing, one of the things I like mostly about it as well is the disc keeps on spinning, so there's no loading times when you go into a new section of the world because the disc is reading it and it's sort of producing it as you're going along. So it's just endless, really. And that was the problem I thought affected certain games on the PlayStation, on those early CD games where you had crazy loading times, and this game completely eliminated it. And I think the other thing I liked about this game as well, you had two different sort of dimensions of the world. So say, for example, you're trying to cross one, from one side of the river to another side of the river.
Yeah.
And if you couldn't do it, what you'd have to do is turn it into the, I can't remember what it was called, but it was like the, the dead world or whatever. It would just change. And all of a sudden you'd see the whole world transform. And then you'd be like, right, now that's how I get across it. And there were so many nice elements. There was puzzle elements, which, again, you had to be really smart. You know, push things, align things,
yeah,
pick things up. There was just everything about this character was amazing. And he was so much better than Lara Croft because you had powers, you had abilities, you could increase your powers as you progressed through the level. So every time you had like a big, massive boss fight, you would take their power. And basically then you could use that power to progress through the game. And it was just amazingly done, mate, honestly.
Yeah.
If you get the chance, Mal, get it on the Dreamcast, you know, because it's amazing, mate.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, I'm pretty sure that I have played it. And that thing you were saying about how it changes worlds.
Yeah.
Isn't that sort of like on Silent Hill?
It is, yeah, pretty much slightly. But this, basically, you change it. You use this when you want. So for example, like you're trying to get to the top of a mountain,
yeah,
but there's no ledges for you to jump on. If you change it, because sometimes you can be wandering around for ages and you're like, how on earth do I get up there? And then you think, right, I change the material world to the other world. And then you see like, I don't know, like maybe like a big bone or something appear on the ground and like rocks appear. And you think, that's how I do it.
Yeah, it sounds really good. It's definitely one I will check out. I'll have to see if I can get it on the Dreamcast.
No, definitely, because that was the version I played afterwards, because I got rid of my PS1 all those years ago, and then about 3-4 years later, I ended up getting myself a Dreamcast, and I started playing that game, and the graphics were even sharper, and I really appreciated that game, because the character Azrael is one of the best gaming characters ever, and it's a shame he's been forgotten. He did appear, you know, he did have a sequel, you know, Soul Reaver 2, which unfortunately I didn't find as great. The storyline wasn't, I don't know, it didn't grip me. I found the game too short. So the first Soul Reaver, guys, if you do get the chance to play it, I'd say give it a go. So yeah, that's me rounded up that part.
Sorry I didn't talk much. It's a game I'm not that used to be totally honest.
No worries, mate. So anyway, my second game I want to talk about is Wonder Boy 3, The Dragon's Trap. Normally there's a bit of confusion because in the arcade there was a different Wonder Boy 3, and that was basically like a little scrolling shoot 'em up where you control two characters, but this is so much better than that. This basically took all the elements from Wonder Boy 2 in Monsterland and just amplified it in so many ways. I mean, what do you think of this game then, Melk?
To be totally honest, I'm more familiar with the arcade version.
Are you really?
Yeah, I think I have played it on the Master System emulator. But I do like Wonder Boy. I used to really like the first one, to be totally honest with you. I know a lot of people can't stand it, but that's the first 8-bit Wars I watched of yours, actually.
Right. Well, the thing is, it took all the elements, and that's what I liked about the Wonder Boy series on the Master System. It just progressed things slowly. Obviously, the first two were arcade conversions, and this third one, for whatever reason, wasn't an arcade conversion. Maybe it was programmed by a different team. But the whole aspect of this game is exploring. It's got that whole Metroidvania sort of feel to it, because you start off with at the end of Wonder Boy 2 in Monsterland, and you sort of like have to try and beat the dragon. And then once you beat the dragon, you get cursed, yeah. And then you get turned into a little dragon yourself. I think Salamander Man. And so you're not Wonder Boy anymore. You're this little character, and you can blow fire. You know, basically brief fire, I should say.
Yeah.
And then what your mission is to do is basically to try and beat all the bosses, like you're meant to. But every time you beat a boss, you change into a different character. And then you start finding these little portal things that make you change into different characters. So you'll find certain areas, Melk, you can't go into because you can't swim properly or you can't breathe under the water. And then later on, you become like this Aquaman-type character. So you can go and swim all around the water. So you can access all these areas that you couldn't access before.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, they've even got this little character like a mouse man.
Yeah.
It's got little sections that you can't actually get on. And the only way you can get there eventually is by being the little mouse man. And you can sort of like walk up walls and stuff like that, walk upside down. It's so smartly done. And it's just, it's one of those things that you want to see what is the next level, or you want to reach that area that you couldn't reach before.
Yeah.
I'm always really surprised that you hadn't played it more, because
no,
I actually think the arcade version's kind of crappy, really.
That's what, when you said Wonder Boy 3, I didn't want to, you know, be funny, but that's the one I was thinking of.
Ah, okay. No, mate, honestly, it's one of those games, I honestly think it's probably one of the Sega Master System greatest game. I think in one of my reviews, I'm sure I gave it, what, 98% or 99%, because there's so much replay value in that game, Melk.
Yeah, I think I've seen the review. That's a bizarre thing, though, because the stronger system, the Mega Drive, has got a conversion of Wonder Boy 3, the arcade one.
Yeah.
And like you said, I never really liked the third one on the arcade as much. The second one's superb.
Yeah.
I really liked the first one.
Well, I think, basically, it's not just like about little characters in this game as well. You know, you get to power up, you find potions that give you more hearts, you can heal yourself, you can find little shops, you can buy items. So there's so much to this game. It's got like a little RPG element to it as well. It's one of those games that if you start playing, Mark, you'll find yourself you've lost the whole weekend, because that's how involving it sucks you in, basically. It's just one of the best games ever on the Sega Master System. And again, guys, if you haven't played it, definitely give it a go. Now, one of the things I found out recently by playing the PC Engine is that's also out on the PC Engine, but it's got a completely different name.
Yeah, they, for some reason, and there's some versions of it on the Super Nintendo and the normal NES as well, by Hudson Soft, who I think they do the PC Engine, don't they?
Yeah, that's right.
Called Adventure Island, and he's called Mr. Higgins or something stupid.
That's it, Master Higgins. It's all to do with the whole licensing thing. But going back to the one on the PC Engine, I think it's called the Salamander or something like that. It looks a lot nicer than the Sega Master System version. And I've been playing that quite a lot recently, because it's all these little graphical touches that just make it seem different enough for me to actually start enjoying it again, Melk.
Yeah, I mean, I like Adventure Island on the PC Engine. I thought that was superb take on Wonder Boy, even though it's basically the same sort of game.
But again, Matt, honestly, the best Wonder Boy game ever has to be Dragon's Trap, mate, honestly. I just want to find out then, from what you listeners think, what do you guys think of Wonder Boy, the Dragon's Trap? Give us your feedback when this podcast goes up on the little comment section and let us know. Alright, mate, so let me wrap that section up. Let's move on to our next section. Yeah, so our next section of the podcast is the topic of the month. The reason why I've decided to use that as a topic of the month is because it wasn't just the artwork in a computer game when I used to buy them on tape that used to sell it to me as well. Because back in the olden days, some of the younger listeners might not even know that you used to load up games on tapes, and the games used to take quite a while to load up. And slowly but surely, the screen used to fill up with these little lines, and then you'd get some amazing artwork. And normally, depending on the artwork on the loading screen, I'd be like, this is going to be a good game by the artwork, or if the artwork's really crap, I'd be like, this is going to be a crap game. So what I want to find out from you, Mal, what are your favourite loading screens and why?
My favourite ones? Well, this is going to make me sound a bit stupid in a way, because even though a lot of them on the Commodore I was really impressed with, because if there was an ocean game, they had the ocean loader music.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
But my favourite one is the Spectrum version of Rambo, because the picture looks just like him, whereas on the Commodore it looks a bit of a blocky mess.
I just love loading screens, because it's amazing how they managed to get all these little, using all these little, I don't know how they managed to produce such amazing artwork, because something like that now, you could just sort of like copy paste onto your computer, there you go, stick it on a game. But like back then, everyone used to have to sort of like draw it individually just to get things like that. So what was it about that Rambo thing you liked on the Spectrum? Like, what did that say about the game as it was loading up then?
Well, it was more of how detailed it was. It did look like Sylvester Stallone. Pretty much like it had been digitised, but I'm pretty sure it hadn't been. Mm. And it just really looked like the actual cover on the movie. Whereas, as I say, if you see it on a Commodore 64 one, it hasn't got the resolution as it. It looks a blocky mess, to be fair. Because one of my friends around there, when the first time I ever played it on a Commodore, and he had a Spectrum, and he was saying, oh, the picture looks amazing. And then when that popped up, I mean, it had the decent music and everything, don't get me wrong, but when that popped up, it just looked, and he says, no, it is better on the Spectrum one, because it looks shit on the Commodore one.
Yeah. What is the next loading screen you want to talk about then, Malk? Any idea?
Yeah, I was always impressed with the Robocop one as well.
That is one of my favourites, mate. Tell us why you like that then.
Well, on the Commodore one, it sort of looks like it's been taken out of the movie, where it's going, where he's all damaged and everything.
Yeah.
And I just thought, and it does actually say about renting the film as well, when it was released on video at the time by Virgin, I believe. I could be wrong.
Oh, I didn't know that. But you're right, that is a perfect example of like an amazing loading screen, because I remember playing that on the C64 and thinking, wow, look at that. It looks like the cover. It looks like it had been digitized. It looks, I don't know, and just, I couldn't wait for the actual game to load up. You know, and then once the game did load up, it had that amazing music and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think it's got the sample as well, on all versions, I'm pretty sure.
I think it does. I don't think it does on the Amstrad, but I could be wrong. I recently did an 8-bit Wars on that, so you guys can check that out. But I think, for me, one of my favourite loading screens, Malk, has to be the first Dizzy game.
Oh, yes, I've seen that on... is that the one you put on the forum not so long ago?
I think, I put that on the forum. I also recently posted it on the in-game music. I did, like, a video music of the first Dizzy game. And I think the picture you'll see there is a loading screen of Dizzy.
Yeah, it's really well drawn.
Now, the reason why I like that was because, again, it was the Spectrum, and you have to wait, you know, for your game to load up, and slowly the screen started to fill up. And then what I saw really captured my imagination, because there's me looking at that loading screen, and I'm reading the cassette inlay.
Yeah.
And it's telling you, you know, what's been happening. You're basically, you've got to try and defeat the evil wizard Zax and save all your friends and stuff like that. But from that picture there, you see Dizzy standing on top of like a little mountain, staring off into the distance. You've got like a beautiful sunset. You've got the castle there. And it just really set the tone for what an amazing game that actually was, Malk. That's why I love my loading screens. A loading screen says so much about a game, really. It really does.
Yeah, they are. A lot of them are really impressive. And especially, like you say, how they used to draw on the screen.
All right, let me try and think of another good loading screen then. Oh, here we go. It's another good loading screen for you as well. Trapdoor. Now, I recently did a video of Trapdoor, but the loading screen in Trapdoor, again, was absolutely amazing. Bright, colourful graphics, beautifully drawn, and again, it just paved the way for what the actual game was going to be. You know, you knew you were going to get something special. And I don't know, I guess I'm just obsessed with artwork, because that's how I judged my games back in those days, Malk. You know, I'd look at the cassette inlay and then put the tape in. And it was just the whole experience of loading up a game, and it's just something that we don't get anymore, unfortunately.
No, but nowadays games rarely load at all, because they either run off the hard drive or run off the disc. You know, loading delays are like very minor, aren't they? A few seconds, if anything. And that's the only time I used to read the instructions years ago, because first time you play a game, it used to take, I don't know, 5-10 minutes to load, depending on the game.
That's right.
And you've got that much more spare time, you know, to actually read the instructions. Nowadays, it's very rarely I read instructions.
No,
to
you're
totally
you're
honest.
Very right. I don't do it anymore as well. Okay, so let's round up that section. Let's move on to the next section, Mark, which is the Quizmaster.
Ah, right. This time I'm the Quizmaster, as it goes.
Right, so go on, mate. So we're going to do it in the style that I did it last week, well, the week before, which was like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
Yeah, multiple choice of out of four answers. Obviously, not like I said last time, where can it be two answers that could be right? Well, I'll tell a lie, one of the questions could be like that. Right then. So if you're ready, I'll do the first question.
Bring it on, mate.
Right. How many Dizzy games were released on the 128K Spectrum? Is it A, 11, B, 23, C, 12, or D, 9?
So it was how many Dizzy games were released on the 128K?
Yep. I mean specifically for that, the 128K, not the 48K rune on that.
Technically, the first Dizzy game, even though, because I saw this on the forum on site, on the actual inlay it does say 128K, but it doesn't actually run on a 128K, it's only 48K. So I'd say about 11. So what was the 11 one? Which one was that?
A.
Was that A?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll go for A then.
Right. Okay. So the second question is, what's the blue dragon called in Bubble Bobble? Is it A, Bud, B, Bob, C, Bud, or D, Craig David?
Craig David!
Yeah, I'm running a vote selector. Hey, up, Kez, I just pissed me said.
Okay, so it was Bob?
What
was that one?
It was A, Bud, B, Bob, C, Bub, or D, Craig David.
Yeah, it was Bub and Bob. So,
right.
Yeah.
And the third question is, how many players in the arcade version of Double Dragon 3 can you have? Is it A, one player, B, two player, C, three player, or four, too many because the game's shit?
Okay, so the question is, how many players can you play at the same time, or characters you can choose to pick from?
Play at the same time.
It's three players, but I do agree with your last section because the game is crap. So yeah, three players, it's a three-player game.
Right, and this one, you may not know the answer to this, and I sort of knew it, but I'm not a fan of this or these type of games. What system was the first FIFA International Soccer released on? Is it A, Sega Mega Drive, B, the Super Nintendo, C, the Neo Geo, or D, the Atari 2600?
Do you think maybe it did start on like a computer as opposed to a console, but I can't be 100% sure. Now, can I phone our friends?
Yeah, I suppose.
What can I do? 50-50 now. You know what? No. I'm going to just say Mega Drive.
Right, okay then. And now, the last question. And this one is a tough one. This is one that you might not get, or you may well do. What was Nintendo's first arcade game? Is it A, Donkey Kong, B, Frogger, C, Mario Brothers, or D, Radarscope?
Right, they didn't do Frogger, because I'm sure that was done by Namco or one of those other ones. So what were the other ones? I don't think it was Mario Brothers.
A, Donkey Kong, C, Mario Brothers, or D, Radarscope?
I've never heard of Radarscope before. You know what? It's not like, you know, if I get this wrong, I'm going to get killed by you. So I'm going to go, to hell with it, I'm going to go for radarscope.
Okay. Right then. I'll read the results then. The first question, how many Dizzy games were released on the 128K? You was right, it was A, 11.
Yes.
Then the second question, what's the blue dragon called in Bubble Bobble? You said B, which was Bob. And that's right, it is. It was Bob.
Yay! Two so far.
Now, the third question. How many players can you have on the arcade version of Double Dragon 3? Now, that could have been two, actually, because technically, you can get the arcade cabinet with two joysticks and play it like that. But right. You said three, which is right as well. Right. So that could have been multiple choice.
So do you give me that point?
Yes, yes. So you'll get the point for that because you were correct. But fantastic. It could have been free. And like the other question was, well, why would you want to play it anyway?
Yes.
What system was the first FIFA released on? You said the Mega Drive, and that is correct.
Yes.
I do think it may have been ported to the Amiga as well, but the Mega Drive version was first.
Fantastic.
And the last question, what was Nintendo's first arcade game?
Yeah.
You said Radarscope, which I'm surprised you knew that, because that was their first game. It was released in November 1980, it was released by, I can't pronounce his name, it's a Japanese name again, which I'm brilliant at doing, Shigeru Miyamoto.
Shiro Miyamoto.
Yeah. And he did that before he'd done Donkey Kong.
Well, you know what?
I would have got that wrong myself.
I got 5 out of 5. I am the man. But you know what? I guessed that last one. No, I didn't guess. I just eliminated. I didn't think it was Donkey Kong. I didn't think it was Mario. So I'm sure those weren't his early games. But yeah. I smashed your questions, mate. I destroyed them. 5 out of 5. I feel like a winner now.
Well, the thing, the other one that was on there, Frogger, that's sort of a bizarre one because that's released by Sega and Konami.
Again, it must be one of those licensing things.
Yeah, that's quite bizarre.
Region. All right then, guys. So, you know what? That was the end of the Quizmaster. I smashed it. Let's move on to our next section, which is our Q&A section.
Right, T.O. says, question one. What is Oliver Twins Part 2 going to be about, and when are you expecting this? Well, when are we expecting this, sorry?
All right, so the way the podcast normally works, Hill, is we normally record the podcast a week in advance. The guest podcasts, we normally record them a few weeks in advance, so that way we've got time to make sure the guest actually shows up. And with the Oliver Twins, I'm sure they're sick and tired of me just emailing them, contacting them, going, oh, you know, I think they've had enough of me for the time being. So we'll give it maybe September. I'll get them on once again. Once they sort of like, you know, think, okay, he's not that bad. I'm sure they'll be back on around September. And the podcast is going to be about life after Codemasters, what they did, you know, and how they formed Blitz Games. So it should be interesting. Looking forward to that once again. Still nervous, though.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine. I definitely would be. Well, his second question is, if Q&A is now episode 13, what happened to Steve Benway's being episode 13 as it was a poddy I'm interested in listening to? Well, I can answer this one for him.
Yeah, go for it, dude.
We're going to, basically like what you said before, have the celebrity or guest presenter on the show more than likely every 4 weeks.
That's right, yeah. And the reason being, again, like we said before, the reason why we're doing it this way is just that way we've got enough time to contact them. We've got plenty of time to edit the podcast to make sure it's like, you know, really good quality. And that's the reason why. All right, so what's his next question then, Mel?
Right. Are we going to have in-game game music return, or is it canned?
All right, the in-game music podcast. Okay, I think one of the things it is, at the moment, you know, I'm doing quite a lot. I'm sort of like running the site, doing the videos on YouTube, editing the podcast, which takes me over 8 hours for each episode. So it's just basically trying to find the time. I know me and Tony, we are going to do like a special episode of the podcast. But again, that's going to take even slightly longer to edit. It's probably going to take me about another 10 hours to edit it, just trying to make sure that everything matches. So that will be like a in-game music where me and Tony are like radio DJs. We're going to talk about, you know, like the music, tell you a little bit about it and play it. And it'll be a whole hour of stuff like that. And hopefully that'll be in the next couple of months. But yeah, I don't think we'll do that all the time because I don't want to give myself so much to do that in the end I just burn myself out.
No, that's absolutely right. I mean, I would imagine it takes a lot of preparation to actually record that as well.
Oh, definitely.
And I don't think that's something, if you've seen my videos, how I record my footage and that, the sound quality is the thing I can't do very well. So I would, you know, help trying to do that myself.
Yeah, you had a little go, didn't you, trying to edit the podcast at one point?
Yeah, and that's about as far as it got. Like, after about a minute, I got well pissed off a bit.
Yeah. So it normally takes me 4 hours to do one side and 4 hours. Well, I'll talk more about that at some other point. All right, so what's his next question then?
What has been your favourite feature on the 1HPS site so far?
What's been your favourite, Mark? Go on, you can answer that.
My favourite feature?
Yeah.
So far, I'd say the meetup.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely, and that's the thing I'm definitely looking forward to when we have it next month. Sometime, hopefully.
Yeah, that's the other thing as well. We'll definitely do another 1HMPS retro meetup. I think it'll be around mid-August. It'll be on a Saturday. It'll be slightly longer this time, but stay tuned. In the next couple of weeks, I'll let you know a little bit more about that. And I think that's been one of the highlights for me. Actually, for me, it's actually having the Oliver twins on the podcast. That's been my biggest highlight, I think. Because, you know, I'm still happy about that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. Really good that we got them. Yeah, they took the time to do it. He's got another two questions.
Has he? All right, fire them away.
Question five: do we have any more special guests in the lineup for the podcast?
We have got absolutely loads of special guests, mate. What do you reckon, Matt? Do you reckon we should tell them or keep them waiting about our special guests?
I think it's better if it's a surprise, myself.
Yeah, what I'll do, I'll normally announce it maybe a few weeks before we get a special guest on, but we've got loads of guests. We've got some more people from YouTube, we've got some programmers from the past, we've got some musicians from the past, we've even got like some other people from other podcasts and loads of different things. You know, I'll tell you what, I can't wait to tell you, you know, I'm really excited about, you know, all these guests because I think it's, you know, it's fun for us, it's fun for you, it's fun for the guests. So it should be absolutely fantastic, but more on that another time.
Right, and his last question is, have you found the time and completed your target for Dizzy One since after recording the poddy and issuing the challenge to yourself on air?
I'll answer that really fast. Nope, not done it. Right, so let me read out G260's question. He put, is there a game that although everyone hates, you secretly enjoy playing? His is Pac-Man on the 2600.
Right.
Well, how do you answer that then, Mal? What are you going to pick?
What, that people think's crap that I like?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think now. There's loads of games I like that a lot of people think shit. I like Wonder Boy, and no one can usually stand that. What other games do I like? A lot of people don't like Pac-Land neither, for some reason.
Yeah.
I always thought it was superb, easily as good as Mario and that, I thought.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but it's a pretty good game.
I do honestly think it's that good. I mean, it's probably because I remember it more from being a child.
Mm.
But I don't know. There's no games that I like that people think's absolute crap and I like them. I mean, like, it's not like Pit Fighter or anything.
Yeah, admit it, Malk. You secretly like Pit Fighter. You play it when no one's looking. For me, I think my guilty pleasure for game has to be probably Shadow Warriors, the arcade game, because I don't think that many people like it, but I just like the fact that you were a ninja, you know, and you could swing from lamppost and kick people, and then the car stages, I thought that was really awesome, so that's my guilty pleasure.
Oh, I've always liked that one myself. I like that better than the new Ninja Gaiden games, to be totally honest with you.
I've not played those, but you know, we'll talk more about that in a future podcast.
Definitely.
All right, question number two, he asks, the house is on fire. You can only carry three games to safety. Which three games do you save and why?
Right, if that's the case, with me, I'd take Splatterhouse.
Yep.
Definitely, because that's one of my favourite arcade games ever. I'll take my external hard drive. That's cheating, because that's got thousands of them on.
No, you can't cheat, mate. You've got to pick like three.
Oh, right.
I was going to say, you take your arcade machine, put that on your shoulder and run up.
I don't think I'll get down the stairs with a bloody thing. It weighs that much. Probably weighs more than I do.
Right, so you got Splatterhouse. What else would you
Splatterhouse, go for? Super Street Fighter 4. Not an old game, I know, but I haven't got Street Fighter 2 anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And my other game, if I had to take one quickly, it'd probably be Castlevania Symphony of the Night, if I had it here.
Oh, you stole mine.
That's probably worth more than any of the bloody other games I've got.
You stole mine. I would sort of say Castlevania Symphony of the Nights, Super Mario World, and trying to think of a third one. Fantasy World Dizzy, because I absolutely love that game. Fantasy World Dizzy's fantastic. All right, his final question is, biscuits, jammy dodgers, or custard creams? What would you go for, Malk?
Me, myself, I like both of them, but
you can only pick one. So say, for example, you know, he's holding one of each in his hand. He goes, Malk, you can only have one. Which one do you have? You don't take two of them and go, ha, they're both mine.
Jammy Dodgers, though. I like them slightly better.
You know what? I've got to agree with you on this one. I'm a bit of a Jammy Dodger fan. It's just, I like the little red thing in the middle. It's just so nice.
I do like custard creams, though. I mean, I'm greedy. I've ate a whole pack of them before.
I'm really fat as well, so I could eat a whole packet of Jammy Dodgers and custard creams. All right, guys. We'll start rounding that section up. If you've got any more questions that you'd like, the host to answer for next week's podcast, please go down to the forum. You'll find it on feedback. Then you go to community Q&A and stick your questions there. You can also sort of like send us PMs with the questions as well on the site. And you know what, guys, we're looking forward to this because we enjoy answering these Q&A questions. So let's move on to our next section, which is Sights on Sights and Malk.
Right then.
What have we got planned for the next, apart from, you know, like a guest on the show? What else have we got planned? What videos have you got lined up for us?
Me, myself?
Yeah.
I've got a lot more 16-bit wars. Let's say Bubble Bobble, Rainbow Island, WTF games that I still haven't uploaded yet. Street Fighter 2, that's a WTF game, believe it or not. If you see the PC version, you'll know exactly what I mean. It's better on a mobile phone.
Oh, man. Oh, God. Well, the other thing I want to talk about then, I mean, I've got a few other videos lined up. I'm not going to sort of tell you what they are because I don't want to ruin the little surprises, but there's a few other little sections I want to talk about on Sights on Sights. I want to talk about the high scoreboards because that is really getting interesting, Mel. Absolutely fantastic. What games have we got on the high scoreboard? Let's have a little look. We've got 1941, Rainbow Islands, Midnight Resistance, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Commando, Donkey Kong, 3 Arcade, Bubble Bubble, Haunted Castle. So there's loads of games that you guys can try and beat the high score, you know, on.
Yeah, Netsuru Koryu Kuryu can.
Yeah, I couldn't pronounce it. That's why I missed that one out.
That's about the only one I do know, and I probably even botched that pronouncing it. A lot of high scores that are going to get him really hard to bloody beat.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
To be totally honest.
Like I mentioned slightly earlier, I will try my best, but it's just trying to find the time because I'm doing so much and it's just hard to juggle everything. But I think I might stick a bit of Chucky Egg up there as well, you know. But I will do the ZX Spectrum version because I kick ass at that game. I really do.
Is that your favourite version? Or
it's a version I played the most, you know. I know a lot of people say it's BBC Micro, but the version I played the most was the Spectrum version. But then again, the old control pretty much exactly the
same. That's giving me an idea for 16-bit wars, actually.
Chucky Egg, God.
I think them versions of it, I just didn't see the bloody point. They make it too hard to see everything, don't they?
It looks really ugly, that game. It does. Really ugly.
that's just one way of, you know, basically saying putting better graphics on a game doesn't necessarily make it a better game.
Yeah, that's right. All right, so I'll tell you what, let's start doing the iTunes reviews, mates.
Right.
Now, since last time me and you recorded, Malk,
yeah.
I think last time we recorded, we only had 11.
Oh, yeah.
And now we've got 14.
That's good.
Okay, we've got one here by, it says, another weekly gem by a G260Z or Z. You're a retro gamer, eh? Your wife's not really into a hobby, is she? And let's face it, if you're lucky to have a wife. So you put, so settle back and listen to hours worth of retro gaming chit-chat and banter. It's like having a good old get-together with your mates down in the pub. Now, the next one is by Big Fiery Dragon. Another five-star review. He put down, without a doubt, the best podcast I've ever heard. And he goes, the title of this review says it all. No joke. Seriously, this is about the best gaming podcast out there. Thanks to the podcast enthusiastic crew. All right, we've got another one by DJZ01. Best retro podcast. The best retro gaming podcast out there. It's better than all those American podcasts where the guys don't know what they're talking about. These guys know the stuff. Hey. Then we've got another one by Matthew Wilshire. He put, just talking retro. Nice feel to this podcast. Don't expect slick pre-scripted stuff. Expect decent chit-chat between two mates, off the cuff, and most real chit-chat about retro gaming. So he says, keep up the good work. These just keep on showing up. We've got one by Darren McKenna. Another five-star review. He says, great retro gaming podcast. This is a really off-the-cuff podcast, bringing back some great memories. Just don't mention US gold. And we've got another one. This was originally our first review we got by someone called The Syrup. Now, he basically put, well worth a listening if you're into your gaming and your movies. And he put, I'm back here to edit my review. Why? Because this podcast just keeps on giving and getting better and better. So well done to all those involved.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, definitely. You know, guys, as always, you know, we need more iTunes reviews. So tell your friends, your family members, your brothers, your mistress, anyone that you can listen to you and tell them to basically subscribe to us. Because what does that do for us, Malk?
It gets the site more noticed.
That's right. And we really have picked up because I think now we've got a total of 43 people on the site.
That's really good.
So let me give out a few little shout outs to a few special people there. First of all, I'd like to give a big shout out to Gareth. And the reason why I'd like to give a big shout out to Gareth is because he's given us a nice donation using that donation button. And that will go towards our hosting. So that way we can make this podcast possible, you know, and always keep it free, basically, of advertising and so on. So thank you so much, mate. I really appreciate that. That was so amazing, that was.
Yeah, definitely.
You got any shout-outs you'd like to say?
I did want to do one, but it sort of gives away... Well, then again, we said it earlier, didn't we? I just want to say thanks to Steve Bramway for being a good guest the other day when I recorded with him.
Yeah, you know what? I've got to give a shout out to Steve Benway. Steve, thank you so much for taking your time out to actually record with us. It means the world to me, you know, and I can't wait to sort of like launch the finished, you know, podcast and have everyone listen to it. You know, I want to make you proud, mate. I also want to give a big shout out to the Oliver Twins. I want to give a shout out to Damien. Damien's been helping me with some audio. I want to give a shout out to Wilshie, who he's been helping me out with some audio as well. And, yeah, pretty much the rest of the community and the rest of the team. What are our YouTube channels, Malk?
Mine is Malk1976.
Yep.
Not cheating there. Swainy's is Swainy101.
Yep.
Tony's is ZXSpecStar.
Yep.
Glenn's is Glenn83100.
Yep.
And yours is the one... that I don't fucking know. Yet again. But I swear I didn't resubscribe to you. I'm sure I didn't.
Okay, my thing is a Local Maniacs at 1HMPS.
Because now we're on the site, I never watch them on YouTube anymore.
That's it. That's the other thing I want to mention. You know, you'll see all the videos here before you actually see them on YouTube. You know, you're more than welcome to check them out on YouTube. If you are, spread the word. Let everyone know about 1HMPS Retro. I'll tell you what, we're going to get bigger, better, better, and we've got loads of amazing guest milk, haven't we?
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, quite a few.
Anyway, I've got to go because I've got to go shopping with my wife in Tesco's. Goodbye from me.
Yeah, and it's bye from me as well. Thanks everyone for listening.
I want to give a big shout out actually to the Oliver twins. I want to say thank you so much, Philip and Oliver, for actually Philip and Andrew.
Excuse me, I have to cut that bit out.
It's all right.
Bloody Diet Pepsi. So.
What section is that, Malk?
Our next section, the Quizmaster?
Nope. Try again.
Oh, shit. All right. Let me think. I'm just looking on my mobile phone now.
Will I give you a clue?
Yeah, please.
Something of the month.
Oh, the topic of the month.
Yeah, so our next section of the podcast is the topic of the month. Right, Malk, what is our topic of the month? That's what you've forgotten.
Fuck, I have as well.
All right. Our topic of the month is loading screens.
Yeah, loading screens. Sorry, you can make it sound like I said it then when you edit it. Something I did notice, going slightly off topic, is you know the noise it makes when a Spectrum loads? That sort of silly noise?
Yeah.
I don't do sound effects as good as Glenn, by the way.
Oh, he's a master.
If you turn up the Commodore, I don't know why I did this as a kid, I must have been a bit silly, but if you turn the volume up really loud on your telly, it does do that on a Commodore as well.
Oh yeah, it does.
Makes some irritating noises. Going slightly off subject, we were playing Mame Hood, weren't we? And we didn't even finish the first level on it, and you said this is awful, so we quit that game.
I don't think we got past, what, two screens?
No.
Yeah. Back to the quiz.
Right.
Right, so let's do this Q&A section. Let me find the questions first of all. Where are you? It's meant to be organised, but I'm not. Where are you, Q&A? Nope.
Oh, I could start if you want.
Go for it, buddy. You still there?
Yeah, I'm just trying to bloody think of one. It's a hard question, that is, to be fair. Right, okay.
Where's my stop button?
I'm having problems with it. I've got so many bloody windows open.
Right, mate. So, yep, we can press stop now.